Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
So this week and every week, we'll start the show with a tip of the week. Then our low-tech item will be about getting free access to national and state parks. We'll focus on some relatively recent changes to copyright laws that have improved accessibility big time. And our high-tech item will be on the history of speech synthesizers with some examples which we think you'll find amusing. But we're holding that to the end of the show. So the tip of the week this week is what we're referring to as flying blind. Not the pilot, the passengers. Tips for getting around an airport and onto a plane without too much hassle. So what's the first thing you have to do is get through security. And every time you go to the airport, they've changed the process and beefed up security. But we all pretty much have to get through the metal detector, and it used to always be an issue getting through. But I think the TSA employees have gotten a little bit better at understanding that not everybody can see very well. They've been better about guiding Pete through the metal detector, but if it's ever a question, you just mention to them that you're blind and say, you know, can you help me through? And they're good. They'll stand on the other side and they'll talk you through, or even if necessary, walk through and walk you through to the other side. So that's great. You're through security. Presumably you found all your own baggage because you had to put that on the conveyor belt on the way in. And now you need to get to the plane. Well, airports are pretty big. But, you know, we've all seen people getting wheeled places in a wheelchair in the airport. Turns out you can also request assistance if your problem is not mobility, it's visual. You can ask for help and they'll walk you to the gate or back from the gate to the exit.
Well, and I used to do that quite frequently when I flew alone before. I was often, you know, traveling around with Nancy and stuff. Airlines used to be, I hope they still are, pretty good about doing things like that, and they're pretty considerate.
Why, there was one time Pete was flying down to Long Island to visit his parents, and he had hyped this trip big time and told them he had a big surprise. And when he came off the plane, he was arm in arm with this gorgeous blonde, and his mom thought that was the surprise.
It wasn't. It was the cake that I was bringing for my aunt who was in the hospital at the time. But now I have Nancy, so there's no surprises, right?
That's right. No surprises anymore.
Anyway, traveling on airplanes used to be, I used to love flying on airplanes, and it just seems like it's such a pain these days. So particularly asking for assistance and anything you can do to make your trip a little bit easier, I think, is a good thing. So, you know, the next thing you have to do now that you're in the airport is to get on the plane. And again, you can ask for assistance if you're alone, or even if you're with somebody, is just ask for early boarding. And this is one of the cases where, you know, often when I travel around locally with Nancy places, we travel, I don't use my cane, and we navigate well together. We have all of our little nonverbal and verbal signals about what's coming up and avoiding obstacles and stuff. But I find it useful in situations like this, particularly at airports, is to take out my cane and use it to show other people that I'm blind. And it's a signal to other people that this person may need some extra assistance or get out of his way. And it also makes the discussion a little bit easier when you say, gee, we'd like to pre-board to make things a little bit easier. And they see the cane and they're usually very understanding. So the cane can be a signal in that regard.
That's pretty much the only thing he uses it for, because he's basically following me. But having the cane there really helps. So if you just get near where you're going to board the plane, when they start calling zone one, if you walk up to the person who's taking the boarding passes with your cane especially and just say, I'm blind, I need some extra time. So it's really nice if you're in there first. And so you spend a little more time in those little teeny airplane seats waiting for everyone else to get settled, but it's worth it for you and for everybody else. You don't plug up the aisles.
Well, and the other thing we've learned to do is, again, We shouldn't give away so many of our tricks, but you know, once you're on the plane and people know you're blind, it's sometimes easier to rearrange seats. These days, it's sometimes difficult to get seats next to each other because of the way the boarding passes are run on the computer and things like that. And if people see the cane, they see you're blind, they see you need some assistance, they're very willing to change seats. And that makes it easier when the flight attendants come through and offering refreshments and things. If Nancy's next to me and can help me out with some of these things and help the interaction a little bit.
And that's the other thing is Pete never takes the aisle seat, so I'm always between him and the stewardess or steward, and so that can facilitate the conversations also because it's really loud on the planes.
Right. So don't be afraid to let people know that you need some assistance. In fact, make it easy for them to recognize that you need some assistance.
Okay, so you got somewhere and you want to have some fun.
I want to have some fun.
Maybe you're not so crazy about walking through a museum where you can't see any of the stuff, but you still want to have a good time. Well, the National Parks system is awesome. There are wonderful, wonderful places, and you don't need to be a huge athlete to enjoy all of them, although some of them you can. So the National Park Service was started in 1916. They have over 400 locations, including 84 million acres of land and 4.5 million acres of water. That is huge. There are almost 2.5 million volunteers who help take care of our parks, and they have over 275 million visitors every year. Well, that's nice, even if you have to pay to get in. But if you're sufficiently visually impaired to be eligible for a radio reading service, you're sufficiently visually impaired to get in for free. And they've got the Access Pass, which gives you free lifetime admission for you and up to three other people in your vehicle. And you just get the pass once, it's good for the rest of your life. Well, if you're listening to this show and you've got sufficient vision problems, that's great. What if you don't? Well, if you're 62 or over, for $10 just once, you can get the same kind of pass. It's a senior pass, and you and up to three companions in your vehicle can get into the national parks for free for the rest of your life. And if you're not so fortunate, and you actually have to pay for admission, it's $80 a year for up to four people in your vehicle. And you can get into any national park all year. And even that's a bargain, even if you have to pay for it.
You know, it's interesting. I remember about how we found out kind of accidentally about the Golden Access Passport for the visually impaired.
Well, they don't call it that anymore. But if you have one, they'll honor it. They call it the Access Pass.
Oh, okay. But we were down in Yosemite, and we walked in, and you must have seen a sign on the wall at the camp station on the way in. And we said, gee, you know, Pete's blind. Can he get one of these passes? And, of course, we didn't have any documentation from a doctor or anything at the time, but I happened to have a Braille watch on. And I opened up my Braille watch, and I took out my cane, and I said, well, why do you think I have these things? And someone was nice enough to give us the pass.
And we make great use of that. But at the state parks, it turns out, you can't use your national park pass. You need a special state park pass. So I kind of forgot to give you the contact information for the National Park Service. Let me start with that. That's www.nps for National Park Service.gov or by telephone at area code 202-208-3818. And for the state parks, now we're in New York State, but we are podcasting this. So for our local listeners, don't think I'm crazy telling people from out of state that obviously you have to go to a different state website and phone number. In New York, for the New York State Parks, their web address is www.nysparks.com. Telephone number is area code 518-474-0456. So again, they've got different kind of passes that'll let you in, very similar to the National Park Service. The regular Empire Passport is $65 per year. You get unlimited day use for your vehicle to almost every state park and recreational facility. And if you're an active or veteran with military service since September 11th, 2001, you can get in for free. There's the Golden Park program, which is same thing for New York State residents 62 or older. This is free access. Or again, the access pass if you have a permanent disability, and whether it's visual, mobility, hearing, you can get into the New York State parks. But you need to apply for this pass ahead of time, and it's a several-page application, and you need to get it signed, and then you need exactly the right photograph. Which,
so you have to plan a lot in advance.
The first one turned out to have some flaws, and right. We had to do that over.
But once you have it, and we're right. Settled down now.
Right.
So you also might check out, if you're not in New York State, you might check out to see if your particular state has programs like that for their state parks and recreation facilities.
You are listening to Viewpoint, 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 Viewpoint.
So this week's focus topic is changes to copyright laws that have improved accessibility. Basically, the new laws enacted in the mid-1990s allow print-impaired people to make an additional copy of copyrighted material in a format that they can use. So you can go out and buy a book. You can't actually read it in that format, but you can change it into another format. This actually creates an additional copy, and you're not obligated to pay the royalties for the second copy. So among other things, this change has enabled Bookshare, which is a peer-to-peer sharing website that provides access to 90,000 books that have been scanned and converted to text. And we'll talk about that a little more in a few minutes. We can't describe the new copyright laws any better than the National Federation of the Blind did, so we'll read their article on the topic. So this is from Future Reflections, which is a publication of the National Foundation for the Blind, from 1997. New copyright law, big breakthrough for the blind. Ever since books began to be recorded or brailled for the blind, copyright laws have been a problem. Copyright clearance had to be sought on a book-by-book and item-by-item basis for anything to be reproduced for the blind. This was an expensive and time-consuming procedure. Sometimes the publisher had to be asked for clearance, sometimes the author, sometimes the copyright power was jointly shared. Books that contained stories or chapters by different authors complicated and delayed the process so much that often such books were never recorded or brailled. In some instances, even after delays of months and an outlay of a great deal of money and time, permission was denied altogether. The development of digital formats and the electronic production and distribution of reading matter over the internet added a new dimension to an already complicated and cumbersome situation. Shortly after taking office, the Clinton administration began to explore changes in the copyright law as part of broader considerations involving the internet. Unfortunately, the legislative bill which was introduced provided for copyright changes that would have made the situation even worse for the blind. However, feeling that this climate of investigation and reexamination of the copyright law offered not only a threat but also an opportunity, the National Foundation for the Blind and others in the blindness field took action. On January 25, 1996, the National Foundation for the Blind hosted a meeting with the president and top officials of the Association of American Publishers, AAP, representatives from the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped of the Library of Congress, NLS, and of course, representatives from the NFB to discuss copyright clearance for reading matter for the blind. After many hours of discussion and negotiation, complete agreement was reached on language to propose as an amendment to the copyright bill then before Congress. The proposal was simple. No longer would copyright clearance be required for non-dramatic literary works reproduced by certain entities in specialized formats for the blind and other persons with disabilities. On February 8, 1996, several major agencies for the blind testified at a congressional hearing in support of the proposal, which came out of this meeting between AAP, NLS, and the NFB. Dr. Tuck Tinsley, head of the American Printing House for the Blind, was there to testify. He said in part, The substitute language for the new Section 108A proposed by the National Federation for the Blind, the Association of American Publishers, and the Library of Congress will greatly assist with the provision of educational materials to blind students at the same time the materials are available to their sighted peers. This amendment will provide long-overdue enrichment to the lives of blind students. It is time to put an end to the unintended effect that copyright has of censoring blind students' access to current ideas, information, and educational resources. On behalf of all the legally blind student population of our country, the American Printing House for the Blind salutes the Association of American Publishers for going to the National Federation of the Blind and working toward language for Section 108A, which is beneficial to all. To make a long story a little shorter, Congress passed the copyright amendments, and the amended bill was eventually signed into law by President Clinton on September 16, 1996.
This change in the copyright law made a really dramatic difference in the types and the scope of material that was accessible to me. And just let me give you a few examples of this. Back in the early 90s, we had our church hymnal that I had asked the church and the publisher of the book. I said, you know, look, guys, you must have this in electronic format since you published the book. If you can send it to me, I can have it in Braille, and then I can sing these hymns also. And at the time, this was an impossible task, because what they told me essentially was, look, these hymns come from many different places. There may be tens or hundreds of publishers, and we'd have to contact each one to make sure that it's okay with them if we put this into a Braille format for you or give it to you electronically. Well, with the change in the copyright laws, this meant that any agency like a church, public agency, social agency was able to make these kinds of changes into Braille, to change some print into Braille or into some accessible format for the blind without getting permission from the publishers. So within a year or two of this law being passed, I was immediately able to get the hymnal in electronic format, and then I started seeing Braille copies of it around that made it a lot more accessible.
Of course, before that happened, after consulting our lawyer friend, who assured us that if we just copied one hymn at a time for ourselves,
for personal use,
we wouldn't be violating the laws, we had this system down pat. Every week on Wednesday or Thursday, I'd call up the church office, and they'd tell me what the hymns were for that week. And we had bought an extra copy of the hymnal that I kept in my office at work. And there I am, supposed to be doing, you know, highfalutin research, but I'd open up the hymnal and hope no one walked in, which, of course, someone always did. And I'd type in the text from the hymn for that week, and then I'd email it to Pete, where he'd take over.
And I'd translate it into Braille and then send it to a Braille printer that I had hooked up at work to my computer. And that's what I'd use to read the hymns or sing the hymns the next week. So the other big thing that changed, that was enabled because of this change in the copyright laws, was this Bookshare service. So Bookshare, I think we've given you the web address, www.bookshare.org. What happens here is a lot of individual blind people used to use optical character recognition to scan in books a page at a time on their home scanners, scan it into their computer, and then convert this to something they could read either electronically or into Braille. And so everybody was doing this electronically, but you couldn't share these things with other people. Well, this Bookshare organization, when the copyright laws changed, they set up a system so that anyone who scanned in a book could send the scanned copy to Bookshare, and they would collect this all in one place and make this accessible to people with visual or reading problems. And that was legal if it was only accessible to, people with vision problems. So they began to collect, you know, hundreds and then thousands of books scanned in by other people.
And now they have 90,000 of them.
Right. Well, now this service has become so much more popular, a lot of publishers are actually contributing some textbooks, already giving Bookshare the electronic format, so no one has to scan it in by hand anymore.
And not just textbooks in the sense of things you use in school, but textbooks in the sense of a book that's available in text.
Right.
So even the New York Times bestseller books.
Yes,
right?
They got a big grant a few years ago that the I think the 10 or 20 items on the New York Times bestseller list each month now are automatically put into Bookshare directly from the publishers. So it's made a whole wealth of material accessible. Then you can download this stuff and read it on your favorite reading device. You can either read it in Windows in an enlarged format, if you like to do that. You can download it to some player, either portable player or to your computer with a speech synthesizer built in, and listen to it that way. So there was a lot of material that was enabled to be published and transcribed into Braille and electronic format. This opened up a great wealth. There are also a lot of magazines available through Bookshare and national and local newspapers.
And predictably, their website is very easy to navigate, very accessible, and they've got links to not only what books and other materials they have available, but what the qualifications are and how to apply for membership. And I think it's $50 a year.
Yeah,
and
it's a nominal fee.
It's changed Pete's life. He is a happy camper. That's the best $50 we spend every year.
Yeah, I've read hundreds of books, literally hundreds of books from Bookshares in the past few years.
So now for this week's high-tech item, we're going to have a little bit of fun. As we've mentioned over and over and over, Pete's been blind essentially since birth. But in the 1950s, there weren't so many fun techie tools to play with. But in the last couple of decades, they've been ramping up. And as his vision's deteriorated, he's been making progressively more use of technology and able to access written material. So we've got some of the old speech synthesizers here, and we're going to spend a few minutes talking about that.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. It lets you see how technology has improved over the years and how some of these access tools have changed over the years. So what we have essentially is a bunch of audio clips of different speech synthesizers, from the very early ones to some of the more current ones, and you can see the differences in how they sound.
So I first met Pete in 1982. That's the vintage of this first speech synthesizer that we'll show you. And of course, we used to work for Xerox. And Xerox, even before the ADA was passed, was very generous and had a strong corporate commitment to provide whatever tools were necessary to enable any of their employees who needed these tools to be able to do their job. And they bought Pete every new speech synthesizer that he needed. So this was the first one, and nobody could understand it, including Pete.
The birch panel slid on the smooth planks. Illume the sheet to the dark blue background. It's easy to tell the depth of a well. These days a chip and lead is a rare dish.
So that was the Echo speech synthesizer. And fortunately at the time, I still had enough vision that I was able to use large print magnifiers and screen magnifiers for computers. Because
which we talked about last week.
That's right. So fortunately, I was able to do that because that speech, even I couldn't understand with a lot of practice.
So then Xerox bought Kurzweil, which, you know, corporate mergers can be a good thing. And they started looking around the company for blind employees who might be able to make use of the Kurzweil reading machine, which was really the first integrated standalone reading device for the visually impaired. And so they called Pete.
And I wound up with a box about the size of a mini washing machine in my office that would have cost someone about $30,000 if they had to buy it. And here's what it sounded like when you put a book on it and it read it back to you.
Hello, I am the Kurzweil reading machine. Welcome to Mid-Manhattan Library. I have been great here for that any blind or visually handicapped person. Please enter a command.
So anyway, you can hear that's considerably more intelligible than the first speech synthesizer that we demonstrated. But again, it sounds very synthetic and has a considerable accent. In fact, you can probably tell that the technology probably came out of Japan. But that was the best they could do in the early 1980s or mid-1980s, even if you spent a fair amount of money.
So the next one is the DeckTalk. This is a little bit fast, but it was the next generation.
The following is a list of topics in today's news. In the sports world, the Red Sox lost to Detroit. First round matches were played in the Wimbledon tennis tournament. Arnold Palmer won the Seniors Golf Tournament in La Trobe, Pennsylvania. In local news, there was a 5-alarm fire in Cambridge.
So again, you can see that the speech is considerably more improved, but it still sounds like a computer. But at least it was intelligible enough that you could, what I call speed listen. And actually, that's the way I listen to a lot of stuff. When you first start using these speech synthesizers, you listen to them, you know, at a reasonable clip, pretty slow, just to learn them. And then eventually you can speed them up as you get used to them. And then later, around in the early 2000s, the technology was improved still further.
Hello, everyone. I am one of the voices from the AT&T Natural Voices text-to-speech engine. Don't I sound fantastic compared to those other miserable speech synthesizers you've heard? Now, if only they could give me a body to go along with this voice.
So that, as the clip indicated, was developed by AT&T Labs back then, and that sounds very natural. You can still tell it's a computer, but it sounds a lot better than it did 20 years ago. In fact, what my understanding is that some of the new speech synthesizers that are being developed these days, that they've gotten so good in terms of sounding like humans that they're starting to put in little coughs and gravelly sounds to make them sound more like a human and less like a computer.
In fact, I've started complaining. It used to be Pete would sit on the other side of the room listening to his speech synthesizer, and to me, especially sped up because he listens really fast, it just sounded like white noise. But they made the voices better and better and better, and it sounded like someone was talking, and all of a sudden it was distracting to me.
Oh, well.
Yeah, you know, benefits and issues with technology advances. So that's about it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about using talking devices to help you exercise, actually getting the exercise, so just because you can't see doesn't mean you can't have fun, accessible reading material focusing on the National Braille Press, and some of the differences and similarities and what's available for audio file formats. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at area code 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.